politics and current affairs.
Backpack.
Back chat.
Your alternative to talkback.
Proudly supported by the Judith Nielsen Institute.
It's Saturday, January 21st. And you're listening to Backchat, where we bring you the stories of Sydney and beyond. We're broadcasting from the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation and pay our respects to elders past and present. My name's Tanita Azagi, and I'm joined by the lovely Holly Payne. Holly, what is up?
Not much. Well, I mean, actually, a lot. It's our first show of the new year. It's great to be back with you. And as always, we've got a stacked show lined up. Pokies are shaping up to be a defining policy issue for the upcoming New South Wales state election. So later on, you'll be hearing from Independent MP Alex Greenwich for an insight into the politics of pokies in New South Wales right now.
And up soon, we'll be chatting about with obstetrician and gynecologist Professor Kirsten Black about why women are finding it difficult to access publicly funded abortions. And even though the procedure is no longer a crime.
But first, have you struggled to find a free parking spot in your street as a renter? We're breaking down the residential parking permit system in Sydney and how it disproportionately affects renters. Of course, if any of that pricked your ears, get in touch. If you're a renter, what's your experience with residential parking permits been like? You can text in on 0409 945 945 or tweet us at BackchatFBI. That's 0409 945 945.
Back talk.
Have you found it hard to find a park in the city? Spare a thought for those who live there.
Getting a free parking spot in Sydney can feel like winning the lottery. We've been chatting to renters and they've been telling us their struggles with parking permits and finding parking permits in Sydney near their place.
Do renters get the short end of the stick with their residential parking permits in Sydney? To break this down, we're joined by producer Sana Sheikh. Sana, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So, Sana, break it down for us. Give us a little bit of an intro.
Sure. So if you've tried to find parking, you know, in the Inner West or the city of Sydney, you'll know that it can be a nightmare. And there's a lot of spots that are essentially limited for 2 hours or have some kind of timed parking available for free. Some councils in Sydney, they offer residents a residential parking permit. So it allows people in that local government area to park somewhere and essentially ignore those parking signs and the restrictions. Of course, there are some exemptions when it comes to this.
Yeah. Sana, do you want to run us through each of the major LGAs and kind of what the parking permits cost?
Yeah, sure. So I have done a bit of research and there is quite a few variants when it comes to how much parking permits cost and the number of parking permits you can get. So, for example, if you lived in the Inner West Council LGA, the first resident parking permit is free and the second one costs $121.40, and there's a limit where you can get only 2 parking permits per address. Whilst for the City of Sydney LGA, all parking permits have a cost. The first permit is $84 and then the second permit is $129. The City of Sydney does have an incentive where if you have a slightly more environmentally friendly vehicle, the cost of the parking permit is less. They've got limits of between 1 to 2 parking permits available per address, depending on which zone you live in. And if you live in the City of Sydney LGA and you live in a unit where that's been built after 1996, then you're not eligible for any kind of residential parking permits. And I guess, you know, we have to take it back to the West. With the City of Parramatta, there's a maximum of 2 residential parking permits that are available for certain addresses, and they cost $15.50 each. Of course, you know, there are many more councils in Sydney Metro that have various different costs and limits. You know, the City of Canada Bay, you're allowed to get 3 residential parking permits, and there's a fee only for your third, whilst the Bayside City Council offers 3 to 4 permits. But of course, all these councils do have reduced fees if you are a pensioner and for some disability parking permits as well.
Yeah, those are lots of like varying factors, especially seeing the difference between City of Parramatta and City of Sydney, for example. And 2 is really limited if you're in a share house, and a lot of people are in those areas.
Yeah, I had a friend who the landlord had 1 parking permit. Her housemate had another parking permit and she couldn't get a parking permit. And she ended up with about $600 in parking fines when she parked near her house.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to hear from one of our listeners, Josh, on his experience.
Hi, my name's Josh. I'm currently renting Newtown and I have a car, but I don't have a parking permit. My experience with parking permits has been you need one really to park in areas for longer than 2 hours and a lot of places like that. The problem with parking permits though is that the fee that you pay is quite high. The problem is that with renting, you don't know how much longer you're going to be at your location. There's no guarantee that, you know, your lease will stay on for a year or so. It could end in 6 months. And it's because of that uncertainty and that high price that I don't have a parking permit.
Yeah, that's just like some of the issues that a lot of our renters face in Sydney when it comes to these parking permits. Sana, what are some of the other issues?
Oh God, there's so many, really. You know, as Holly mentioned, if you live in a share house with more than two people, then if you're the third or fourth person wanting to get a residential parking permit, you might not be able to get one. And I think something that's quite interesting is, you know, when I did some research about this, to get a residential parking permit, you need to have proof of that residence, that you live in that particular address, but you also need to have your vehicle registered to that address. And I mean, that can be quite a challenge, particularly if you are subletting, for example, you might not have a residential tenancies agreement that you could show to your council. I mean, Holly, you know, we were chatting earlier and you were telling us your struggles with not having your vehicle registered.
Absolutely. I moved into state in very early 2021. And at the time that I moved, it was early January. So all the real estate agents were closed for the break, and you can only get an interim permit where you don't have to prove they give it to you easier if you can prove where you live. I could not do that because I was subletting and all the real estate agents were closed, and it turned into this 2 month long saga of parking my car in a different suburb.
That's such a shame. And, you know, as Josh did mention, the cost of these parking permits are quite, inaccessible for a lot of people. If you've got to pay rent, paying $121 to get a parking permit where there's no guarantee that there's a free spot for you is quite a challenge.
And, you know, if you can't get these permits, there's higher insurance costs as well if you park on the street, which is just like another blow, you know. You can't win, in this situation here.
Yeah, I think it just seems like the reality of the parking permit system in Sydney doesn't reflect the reality for many people who rent. If people don't have stable rent, you know, like they don't have a guaranteed place for quite a few months, it might not be worthwhile for them to, you know, cough up a lot of cash to get these permits. And this is an issue that I think a lot of people around Sydney have been facing. You know, I even found a Reddit forum about this. Somebody said, and I quote, "I live in Surrey Hills, 3-bedroom house with a garage, no permits issued due to existing garage. My neighbours sold their car as they could never find a park and use a conveniently parked share vehicle GoGet instead." I mean, it's such a shame, really.
Yeah, definitely. And we want to hear from you guys. Have you had issues when it comes to your parking permits in Sydney? You can text in on 0409 945 945 or tweet us at BackchatFBI. Sana, thank you so much. This has been really interesting, and we definitely want to see how this may fold out, like, in the state election, if there's, you know.
Yeah, thank you, and I think it's time that we see some councils in Sydney really change this parking permit system to reflect, how it should be for renters.
Absolutely, and don't go anywhere. You're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio. Don't go anywhere. Next up, we'll be hearing from one of the doctors trying to make abortion access fairer in New South Wales.
But right now, you've got new music from local dream poppers, Internal Dust. This is Candy, and you're tuned into Backchat on FBI 94.5.
Yesterday was not my birthday, so you're wrong. My birthday was last month.
Backchat
on
FBI Radio.
With the state election in March, it's becoming clearer which issues are going to be influential in the election. One of the hottest topics right now is Sydney's gambling problem and how politicians are going to help with these issues.
Absolutely. New South Wales Labor Party leader Chris Minns has proposed gambling reform if he is elected in March. Whilst Dominic Perrottet has been hesitant about the coalition's gambling reforms other than proposing a cashless gaming card.
Today we have Alex Greenwich, an independent member for Sydney, chatting with our producer Timothy Nguyen about Labor Party's gambling reform and also his perspective as an independent.
It's the gambling reform proposed by both parties. Could you just provide some insight into why this issue is so
controversial and pivotal for this election?
Well, I really welcome that in this election, gaming reform is seen as one of the major issues. You know, in previous elections, it has really just been myself and the Greens that have raised it as a concern. But in this election, we're seeing the major parties finally developing policies. In previous elections, we've seen the major parties actually sign an MOU with Clubs New South Wales, committing them to no reform in this space. They're not doing that with this election, and so it's really great to see the major parties interested in reform here. I also have to say what we have seen in New South Wales that has led us to this point is really strong advocacy and campaigning from people like Tim Costello and organisations like Wesley Mission. We also know that so many people have been impacted by problem gambling. You know, loved ones who have, you know, who have developed a serious gambling addiction. And New South Wales has become the gambling harm capital of Australia. But we've also become the money laundering capital of Australia. And the New South Wales Crime Commission did their Project Islington, which found widespread money laundering and the proceeds of crime pouring in to poker machines in clubs and pubs across New South Wales. So that New South Wales Crime Commission report was also a call to action to do something.
But my second question kind of leads into that with the criminal activity and Australia's gambling problem. Do you see Chris Minns' gambling reform that was recently proposed into the media and to the public as a good first step to combat against these problems? Or do you think the reform is kind of playing it safe with the election coming up?
Look, with Labor's policy, there are some good things. It is good that they're talking about removing signage from that we see widespread across, particularly the Sydney CBD. It is really good that they're wanting to reduce the number of poker machines that there are. And obviously, they will seek to ban donations from the club's sector. I would have liked to see Labor go further than that and return about the $500,000 that has funded Labor campaigns over the past 10 years. I would have also liked a stronger response when it comes to cashless. So under the Labor policy, for an indefinite period of time, in 85,000 poker machines, you'll still be able to launder money and those machines will still be causing harm. Their policy also talks about new machines only being able to take $500 in one go. This is a very small percentage of gaming machines in New South Wales, when there are still machines out there that can take $10,000 in cash in any one day. And that's where the real problem is. So we really need to see our Labor embrace cashless technology to really make sure that when the casinos go cashless, that the clubs and pubs are also going cashless. And throughout this journey, obviously, that sector needs to be supported because their profits will take a hit and they do contribute to their local communities. But we have to end the cycle of problem gambling and money laundering in communities, and the really appalling blight that is on our state, giving us the title of both the money laundering and gambling harm capital of Australia. So yes, I would like to see Labor's policy is a good start. It needs to go a lot further. But at least they've released a policy, right? So we haven't yet got that from the coalition government.
But, yeah, and you have, like, one more question, and it's just basically what you would like to see in the future after, like, the trial, like, because there's a mandatory trial that if Labor goes through, but I wanted to see what you would do if, as a politician, like, how would you approach this issue? Because I know you have a different perspective on a lot of different politicians and you've been the biggest advocate for it.
Hello, Kirsten.
Ooh. Hello.
This trial is not a mandatory trial. It's only for 500 machines, which is less than 1% of the total gaming machines in New South Wales. So I'm not sure how they get away with calling it a mandatory trial. It certainly isn't. And there's holes all through it. In terms of what will happen in the next term of parliament, I'm really hoping I get re-elected, and I'm really hoping that we have a widened crossbench with independents and Greens, because we know whatever policy either major party puts forward, it's going to be up to the crossbench to strengthen it. We did that with the casino control Act, which we put cashless cards within 2 years in casinos and limits on how much can be used. And the same thing will happen when we deal with reform in the clubs and pub sector. It will be the independents and the Greens who will ultimately deliver and strengthen this reform because the major parties have shown they're not prepared to be bold in this space. So that's how I see this going. And, you know, New South Wales will have cashless gaming. It's not a question of if, it's a matter of when. The fastest way to get that, to crack down on problem gambling and money laundering in New South Wales, is to make sure that people vote for independent candidates at this next election. You know, whether it is in seats like Langhove and the independent candidate Victoria Davidson, or in Pittwater and the candidate Jackie Scrooby, independents who are standing strong on gaming reform against Liberal candidates. But also, you know, we know that the Greens are great in this space, and I really want to make sure that the three Green seats are returned as well. So that's what people can do. They can vote for independents or the Greens to make sure we get gaming reform sooner than later.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But that's all I had. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much.
You are listening to Backchat on FBI Radio 94.5. You just heard from Alex Greenwich, an independent member of Sydney, chatting about his thoughts about Labor's recently proposed gambling reform. Sit tight.
We're going to chat about the public hospital abortion access in New South Wales. But before that, we're going to be taking you to Ireland with new music from Big Pig. This is In the Dark, Keep It Locked.
Backchat.
Text 0409 945 945.
Just as a warning, we're going to be discussing abortion and miscarriage in this segment. If that's a sensitive topic for you, it might be a good idea to tune out for about 5 minutes.
In 2019, New South Wales passed laws decriminalising abortion up to 22 weeks. At the time, it felt like a landmark victory, but 3 years on, women are still locked out of the system.
To explore why that is, we're joined by Professor Kirsten Black, an obstetrician gynecologist who is pushing for better access. Good morning, Kirsten, and welcome to Backchat.
Good morning.
Kirsten, what has your experience been with patients who are trying to access an abortion through a public hospital?
Yeah, so in New South Wales, as you said, we did get decriminalisation in 2019, but that has not translated into public hospital access. And most hospitals in New South Wales do not provide a public abortion service. And this means many of my patients really struggle to find the money to pay for an abortion through a private community service. And many women in rural and remote areas of New South Wales have to travel very long distances to get an abortion. And, you know, this is terrible. We provide free care in the public hospital system for women having a miscarriage, women having a pregnancy, continuing a pregnancy to a birth, but we don't provide services for women who decide for social, financial, health reasons that they can't continue the pregnancy.
Absolutely. And what happens when a woman has an unwanted pregnancy and she can't get to a public hospital, you know, whether it be far away from her or unaffordable to get a private one?
Yeah, so, I mean, most women have to find the $400 to $600 that is required for a medical or surgical abortion. So sometimes they borrow money from friends. Sometimes there is a few free services available, but only in central Sydney generally. There is a very small service in Newcastle. But other than that, you know, women really struggle. And women, I think some women will continue to with the pregnancy because they just don't have access to abortion. And we know actually that, you know, 50% of Australian women have an unplanned pregnancy in their reproductive lifetime, and about one in four women will have an abortion. So we really, you know, it's not equitable that women just don't have access to this service.
You're listening to Backchat on FBI 94.5, where we're talking to gynecologist obstetrician Professor Kirsten Black about the challenges facing abortion access in New South Wales. Kirsten, if a public hospital is taxpayer funded, how can they just straight up refuse to do a certain procedure like an abortion?
So yes, I mean, New South Wales Health really says that the hospitals need to provide pathways for abortion care, but that's just actually not happening. So New South Wales Health really needs to ensure that all the area health services across the state are actually providing this service to their patients. So we need, as a community, I think, to speak up and to pressure, you know, governments and local health districts to actually start to provide this service so women have equal access to abortion no matter where they live and no matter what their socioeconomic circumstances. I've actually started a group called Australian Clinicians for Choice, really to, you know, as group of doctors and nurses practicing in the field of abortion, to really try and inform the public about this problem. And also because every day we confront, you know, patients. I have patients who said that they've just had terrible experience going to a public hospital and being turned away. General practitioners who are trying to find a public hospital service for their patient, and they've rung like 20 places to try and access a service and being turned down. So it's completely not acceptable that there aren't services available. They need to be funded and they need to be really transparent so there's very clear pathways for women to access these services.
Absolutely, Karsten. We absolutely agree. And what can young people do? Like, just quickly, you know, you've said you've got this group, Clinicians for Choice, but how can young people make sure that this is an issue, especially with the upcoming state election?
Yeah, so young people really need to be aware. So often people, I don't think, are aware until they've actually faced the situation of this issue of lack of access. So really important if young people can write to their GPs, write to their hospitals and say, can you tell me whether you are providing abortion care? Because, you know, this is a fundamental sexual and reproductive health, you know, service access right. And we really, you know, we want to make sure that we have access to the service should we ever need it. So I would encourage people to talk to their friends about the issue. I would encourage them to write to their local member of parliament, to write to their area hospitals, their local hospitals, and ask them, are they actually providing this service? And also to talk to their GPs.
That was gynecologist and obstetrician Professor Kirsten Black talking about abortion access. Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
FBI.
FBI. 94.5.
And that's it. We're out of time. Of course, a big thanks to our guest Josh Wan, Professor Kirsten Black and Alex Greenwich, and another round of thanks to our producers. And of course, one more round of thanks for you for tuning in, not for just today, but all the other shows this year. This has been Backchat, your go-to wrap for the news and current affairs that matter to you.
We'll catch you again at 9:30 a.m. next week, Saturday. But until then, stay tuned for Limbs Akimbo, up now.